We're doing Ein Yaakov, and we had begun the introduction last week, and we had said that we'd come back to discussing the historical impact of the book Ein Yaakov. Now, initially when this was composed, the author named it Ein Yaakov, and Beis Yaakov, the first two volumes. Those were the only two volumes he managed to put out in his lifetime. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Shlomo Ibn Chaviv is the composer of this work, and he had wanted to compose it much of his life. In the middle of his life, the Spanish Inquisition took place, and he was banished from Spain together with, this is Rabbi Yaakov Bar Shlomo, the composer of the Ein Yaakov. He was banished, the book we're learning, the Ein Yaakov. He was banished together with the Barbanel and the composer of the Akedas Yitzchak. When he left Spain, he had to migrate until finally he landed in the city of Saloniki, where he was able to attain a shas. Throughout the years that he was wandering, he couldn't get his hands on a complete shas or the commentaries on the shas. That's Mishnah, and I mean Shisha Sidre with the Gemara. He couldn't get his hands on a complete Talmud. Now, towards the end of his life, he did get his hand on a complete Talmud, and he worked very hard to attain that and the commentaries, and he put together the Ein Yaakov, which he says is going to be a compilation of the Midrashim in the Shas revolving around 12 points, he says. There are 12 points that he wants to get across, and they are, he calls them his 12 pillars. The first is the importance of Torah, the second is Avoda, and each of these breaks down to more specifics, which we won't go into tonight. The third is Gmilut Chasadim, acts of kindness. The fourth is Din, the importance of justice. The fifth is Emet, the importance of truth. The sixth is Shalom, peace. The seventh is Tshuva, repentance. The eighth is Gan Eden and Gehinom.
Together as one,
yeah. Pillar. The ninth is remembrance of things that when a person remembers them, so they're all connected to one another, but they're going to cause him to remember to be a God-fearing person, to love God, and they'll cause him to remember the mitzvos and the things that are good traits that he should acquire. The tenth is Kisei HaKavod, which breaks down into Hashgacha and Maase Merkava and more, and Shedim and demons and stuff of the sort. The 11th is Bet HaMikdash, be it the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash itself, and what happened in the destructions of the Mishkan, of the Bet HaMikdash. And the 12th is Mashiach, which discusses both the coming of Mashiach, Eliyot, Tchias HaMesim, Olam Haba. All these concepts are the concepts which he wanted to include the Midrashim that speak about them. So he's not going to include every Midrash that appears in Shas. He's going to include those that discuss these. Now, he managed to write on the first two starim, on Seder, Moed and Nashim. There's almost nothing on Zran. And his son had to complete the rest of the works. The works that he did, those works, he got many, many commentaries on them, and he added his own commentary to them. And the other works, his son didn't fare as well in attaining the commentaries. Now, initially he called the first volume Ein Yaakov, and the second volume was called Beis Yaakov, after his name. And we're going to do a little bit of study of history. When Christianity began, the Christians were persecuted. And as Christianity evolved, the Christians started persecuting. Now, this persecuting took an abrupt change in the, really was the 13th century. We're going to discuss primarily the 16th century. But this was when the persecution became a persecution of Jewish works, which evolved into the persecution of the Jewish people. Up until the 13th century, there wasn't such heavy persecution by the Christian church against the Jews. It was in the 13th century when the church for the first time started persecuting Jewish texts. And the church under Gregory the Ninth decreed that all versions of the Talmud must be burnt. And in France and Italy, in the year 499 on the Jewish calendar, just before the beginning of the fifth millennia, and on the Gregorian calendar, that's the year 1239, the Christian church decreed to burn all versions of the Talmud. Now, we have to recognize what France and Italy meant. Most of the Jewish printing presses were there. France, you didn't yet have a printing press. We're not yet holding by the first printing press. But later on, we're going to see that the decrees revolve around France and Italy. And most of the Jewish schools have been revolving around France and Italy. And when these decrees come out, so the Tosafist works are destroyed. So we have a situation where the Tosafists, who live primarily around France and Italy, most of their works are burnt with the Talmud because they wrote their works as adjuncts to the Talmud, as footnotes, so to speak. So when the Talmud's burnt, so is the words of the Tosafists. And this leads to a scramble in trying to resurrect the Talmud and the words of the Tosafists. Now, that decree, the first decree of 1239, that decree caused tens of thousands of texts of Talmud to be burnt. Now, each of these were handwritten. These we're talking about at a time when the writing of each version of the Talmud, each copy of the Talmud, took a long time. And this was a loss that was staggering to the Jewish people. You had situations where rabbis would sit and give over the Talmud by heart to their students because they couldn't get a copy of the Talmud. So they just redacted it by heart. The decree was repeated a few years later in the year 1264, the Common Era, by Pope Clemens IV. And it was only in the year 5 to 80, that the church again permitted the printing of the Talmud. That only lasted for 33 years, after which again there was a decree to burn the Talmud. And that's the decree which we're going to focus on, the decree at the onset of the Jewish year 5314, 1554. Now, what's interesting is the background to a lot of these. We're going to get to the Spanish Inquisition. Well, right now we're focusing on Rome, Italy. A lot of these decrees against the Talmud began with a debate. The rabbis were forced to debate against a priest or against a Jew who had converted to Christianity, and very often they were the ones who urged the fight against the Talmud, and then they'd quote passages from the Talmud that they were well versed in and say, you see, the Talmud speaks badly about Christians. The Talmud has to be destroyed. Almost every Talmud burning was initiated by an apostate, by a Jew that had converted to Christianity. They were the ones that pushed it on. We don't have time to go into it. I'm going to post on the bulletin board two pamphlets. One entitled The Intro to Ein Yaakov, which is also going to be available on the website, and another one entitled Antisemitism. Just a short outline of anti-Semitism and some lesser known events of anti-Semitism. And in the end, I have a few pages just showing a few of the events of the last few years, the last 2 years, the anti-Semitic events that occurred that we tend to ignore because the media doesn't make a big deal out of them, but we should be aware of what's going on in the world. One of the more famous ones that's recorded is the machlokas in which the Rosh's father, Rabbi Yechiel Mipariz, together with three other rabbis, had to fend off against an apostate. He makes his claims against them. And they know that if they mock him and they mock the priests, then they'll be killed. And if they lose the debate, then they'll be banished. So now they have to walk a fine line in front of the judges, which were often the kings and queens and people who were not necessarily so learned, and at the same time defend the Talmud, show they couldn't win the debate and they couldn't lose the debate. They had to more often try to bring the debate to a stalemate where the one who was making the claims would have to concede that really he has no claims. They couldn't win. They couldn't afford to win the debate, but they couldn't lose. So walking this fine line, they had to answer the claims that often it was an apostate or the priests were making against them. And the outcome of some of these debates were the burning of the Talmud. And sometimes it was so obvious that the rabbi had won that it took years for the church to have the gall to put out the decree that the Talmud has to be burnt as a result of this debate, because everyone present knew that we hadn't lost the debate and that they couldn't prove that the Talmud had said anything bad about Christianity. Nonetheless, after 2 or 3 years, they'd say yes, but because of the outcome of this debate, the Talmud must be burnt. We say it half jokingly, but this is one of the tragedies of Jewish history. As always, the rabbis responded. Of course we lost. Books are burnt, it leads to peoples being burnt. Ultimately, this is what led to the Spanish Inquisition. This is what led to the Jews' expulsion from France, from Spain, from... Yeah, we're going to discuss that in a minute. We'll get to that. Now, in the year 1554... we have mass burnings of the Talmud in Rome, and then it spread to Venice, and almost all the Italian cities had joined this decree that the Talmud must be burnt. Again, we have tens of thousands of copies of the Talmud being set ablaze. Now, at this point, the printing press is around, but almost all the printing presses that were owned by Jews were in Italy. That's why we see Rashi script. That's why we see most of the Chumashim till this day are written in Sephardi letters, because the first printing presses that printed Chumash were owned by Sephardim. So that's the letters they fashioned. The Pope decreed in the middle of that year, in May of that year, that any Jew caught with a Talmud or book of Agadah, Ein Yaakov, will be punished bodily and monetarily. And so in May of that year, they raised the heat, so to speak, under the Jewish people, and more versions of the Talmud, more texts of the Talmud that Jews owned in their private homes were forcibly given over, and Ein Yaakov was given over and burnt. And 5 years later, in the year 1559, the decree spread to other countries, and another 10,000 copies of the Talmud were burnt. The yeshiva of Rav Yosef Otlinga, the composer of Luach Dinim, was terminated at that point. He couldn't last. Now, 10 years later, the Jews came begging when the Pope convened a great religious assembly. This was Pope Pius IV. And they begged them to allow the printing of the Talmud. Now, we're talking about 10 years have passed when Jews don't have a Talmud in their home. The rabbis have to teach by heart. One of the reactions to this was the writing of Sefer Mitzvos Agadol, Sefer Mitzvos Katan. When the Talmud was burnt, the rabbi said, okay, we have to write down a summary. This goes back to the 13th century. Sefer Mitzvos Agadol was written. They said, if the Talmud is burned, we have to write a summary of the bottom line outcomes that we have from the Tosafists. One of the works that was written is the Ein Yaakov. Now, the Pope agreed that the Talmud and Agadah could be rewritten with two conditions. One, it had to be gone through by a censor. And two, they had to rename it. No remembrance of the original name could be mentioned. Before this enactment could actually come to be, the censor had gone through and taken out anywhere that it said anything that could be misconstrued as a claim against Christianity, and took out the word Talmud from everywhere in the Talmud, even where it is used as a verb and not as a noun, not as a reference to the Talmud, but rather as learning, study. He took that out and changed it to Limud, changed it to Shas. They wanted to print, and the Pope died. A new Pope came and forbade printing the Talmud. Now, the only thing that they were permitted to do at this time was to print Agada. And so we have a period of 14 years where the Jews cannot print a Talmud, but may print an Ein Yaakov. And the censor of the Talmud was much stricter than the censor of the Ein Yaakov. So we have things that were censored out of the Talmud, but still existed in the Ein Yaakov. And now you have Jewry in France, in Italy, you have Jewry in these areas of Europe that is their sole connection to Judaism, to the oral law, is the Ein Yaakov. So the Ein Yaakov played a central role in the synagogues and in the Jewish homes because it was permitted to be printed while the Talmud was not. And so you have over a decade in which Jews are learning Ein Yaakov, and they can't learn almost anything else. They could learn what the rabbi could teach them by heart. 14 years later, again, they're granted permission to print the Talmud. But once the Ein Yaakov has entered the Jewish home as a central book, it hasn't left. And to this day, it is a book which is learned in shuls and by the simple people to get the basic morals that Chazal wanted to give us. And next week, Bezrat Hashem, we're going to try to have another introduction about the importance of Agadah. But I think now it's time for Avit, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And